From a man being stabbed to death in his Over the Rhine home to a downtown brawl that's gotten national attention, violent crime in Cincinnati has dominated headlines for months. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss efforts to reduce crime and whether there's more that could be done are Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillage. Welcome back, Prosecutor Pillage.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Cincinnati City Councilmember Jeff Kramerding. Welcome back to you too, Councilmember Kramerding.
Good to be here.
And Cincinnati Inquirer Opinion and Engagement Editor Kevin Aldridge. Thanks so much for being with us, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for having me on board.
Councilmember Kramerding, you know, we talked about this brawl that happened downtown on our program last Friday. After that discussion, the Inquirer reported on a previously unreleased video that shows a man shouting a racial slur before the fight. There have also been reports of a white man slapping a black man before the larger fight happened. Have you gotten details about any of this? How does all of this factor into the way you're thinking about what happened?
Yeah, so, you know, the videos, and it is my understanding that more videos were released, show that many bad actors, that many people committed bad actions. As the police chief said, anybody that committed a violent act will be charged. So that's what we're operating under at City Hall and what I look forward to in the future.
Prosecutor Pillage, I know you can't talk about the specifics of the fight until grand jury proceedings are completed. Can you say whether just generally in the case of an altercation, does the use of a racial slur or some kind of slap, does any of that get taken into consideration?
Well, we do walk a fine line in protecting freedom of speech while not protecting fighting words or violent incendiary language. But in Ohio, we do have a law that's about ethnic intimidation, and that can be applied only under special circumstances when some other offense has taken place as a part of the interaction. Not having seen these facts on this one that you just mentioned with the council member, it's too early for me to talk about it.
Okay. Kevin, should specifics like this be part of the conversation around that brawl, the charges people face, the perceptions around what happened?
Well, certainly I think so, especially when you start talking about accountability and how things escalated and got to the point that, you know, this fight, scuffle, brawl, however you want to determine it, turns into a national issue. I think a lot of the conversation in the community is everybody being held accountable for their particular part in this. I think a lot of the national narrative, some people feel, has been on, and rightly so, obviously, those who took things to an extreme level in terms of stomping on and addressing the gentleman in question. But there's also this question of, you know, what role did he play in creating the incident to begin with, and what was his duty to walk away? So I think what I hear from the larger community is a desire for everyone, not to excuse anybody's actions per se in this situation, but to make sure that everyone who is responsible for things escalating to the point that they were being held accountable.
Councilmember Kramerding, in your view, what are the most important things the city is doing to try to reduce violent crime right now in Cincinnati?
Yeah, we are doing many things, and you know, at City Council we say it's and. So there are so many strategies that we've been working on. You know, certainly this council has been very active on youth violence and preventing that, and starting to address this at its root cause. And it's also, you know, a visible and engaged police force is also a part of the equation as well. It always has been, and you know, it should be. So that's part of it moving forward, is talking about to what extent do we need more police visibility. Certainly a lot of cries in the wake of this for more police visibility, specifically walking patrols, bike patrols. In the city, we've got trikes now, which are three-wheel motorized vehicles, which move very fast and over all sorts of terrain, which is another tool that the police have. So we'll be talking about all of those options moving forward.
Well, in Councilmember Cramerding, last Friday, Police Chief Thigy referred to a, quote, revolving door of justice, end quote, as part of the problem. How could that be addressed, assuming that you think that might be part of the problem?
There is a perception among some of our police officers and among some citizens that sentencing and bond issues are part of the problem. I've talked to many judges that have stated that this is not the case, and they cite some important examples. I do think that the perception is a problem and needs to be addressed. There's been quickening discussions about a sentencing and bond commission that would look at sentencing and bonds and get data. And the purpose of this would not be just to say, you know, that bonds should be increased. To the contrary, it should be data saying, you know, what works when it comes to sentencing and bond and what doesn't work. To what extent do chemical and alcohol treatment programs work? To what extent do our diversion programs work? Really getting data for all people so there is confidence throughout the justice system.
Hmm. Prosecutor Pillage, what do you think about a possible sentencing or bond commission? Is that something you're interested in? Do you think something like that could help?
Oh, sure. I think that's always something that we should be looking at from time to time. I really like the councilman's discussion about data. And we have seen across the country, just using AI to collect all this data and put it together does help judges make decisions about sentencing, especially based on the facts that they're looking at. We are trying here in the county to upgrade our technology, and some of the technology we're using was being used when I first started practicing law in 1988, so it's pretty out of date. And I think if we can upgrade our technology, we will come up into the 21st century right along with Claremont County and Warren County and about 68 other counties in the state. Where I don't know why we're so behind, but having some data to help us would be helpful. As to bond, the Supreme Court does comment from time to time on standard bonds. And when the judges become judges, they go to judge school to learn about these things. It's also in our criminal law handbook that we carry to court every day to have those things. But we need to compare what happens when we issue the bond that is customary and see what's going on with these suspects and defendants when they get that kind of bond. I think data will be very, very helpful to us.
We're talking about what's being done to reduce violent crime in Cincinnati and whether more could be done. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Kevin, you wrote a column about this issue for the Inquirer. What do you think about what the city is doing already? Do you think additional policing could fix the problem or help fix the problem?
Well, certainly I think increased police presence, particularly in areas where we know we're having some crime issues, undoubtedly will probably help. But you know, my point is that, you know, we cannot police our way out of this situation that we're in. Policing is part of the playbook, as I said in my column, but it's not the entirety of the playbook. And I think the mistake that we can make in this is thinking that if we just throw more money at police and more money at some of these public safety measures, that is necessarily going to make Cincinnati a safer city. I think it will definitely make our jails fuller. We may arrest more people, but it in the end, it might not really address the things that are creating and leading to the crime challenges that we have. So I think it's a multi-pronged approach. I think the city has been trying to take that multi-pronged approach and looking at a lot of different ways to attack the crime problem. And certainly it's understandable right now why more police would seem like it's the answer. Because right now you have this, again, this sense among a lot of people that downtown, over the Rhine, and maybe even some parts of the city are unsafe. And the only thing that is going to make some of those people feel safer probably is seeing a more visible police presence, even if it doesn't actually result in increasing safety. Sometimes it's the appearance. And as we know from this situation, perception and appearance is everything. Hmm.
Councilmember Kramening, in the case of this fight downtown, I think one of the men charged had a prior gun charge or gun charges. The man charged with stabbing in the Over the Rhine gym owner to death in his home had cut off his ankle monitor and had violated parole. What role do you think bail and parole play in these cases? Do you see a role there?
We all agree that, you know, bonding, you know, plays an important role. You know, there are people that are charged with a crime, and some of those people may be a threat to public safety, and you know, they should have a high bond or be held over in extreme situations where they just can't be released. You know, I think that situations like that are not the norm, but I think that's why we do need data to understand the entire system, to understand why judges are making the decisions that they are, to make sure that judges have the resources that they need to make informed, educated decisions. I should say, so that the judges have the data and the technology, as the prosecutor said, to make these decisions. So I think right now there is a lack of confidence, and Kevin's talked about perceptions, and certainly that's the perception among some officers and some people. And we need to address that and build confidence in this part of the justice system.
Prosecutor Pillage, what do you think? Just, I know you talked about how there are guidelines for bond. Judges get instructions, they get training. You all have information that you bring to court with you every day. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, do you think there's a problem with the system when it comes to bonding and parole?
Well, let's talk first about Mordecai Black, who stabbed the man to death in his own home in Over the Rhine. And that was just a horrific incident, horrific. And his poor widow is struggling with this. We need to, one of the things that we need to do is make sure we communicate effectively with the general public. Obviously, when anybody puts something on social media and someone misreads it or hears it wrong, and then they broadcast that and amplify it, things go viral, but people don't have the right information. Mordecai Black was not on bond. He had just gotten out of prison. He was not on parole. He was on something we called post-release control, which still monitors him, with an ankle bracelet so we could figure out where he was. So when he cut off his ankle bracelet, the parole board knew this because they control those, but we didn't know that. So that's a big problem with communication within our system. We're working hard to fix that. I know the police chief and the sheriff are working hard to make sure that we get notified, that law enforcement gets notified. The other thing that I'd like to mention is that when the police or the sheriff brings charges and they book someone into jail, that person will be seen by a judge within 48 hours, usually in the morning. It's a regular thing, Monday through Saturday at the jail, and bond is then assessed by the judge. Now, we certainly, my office is there very early to go through all the cases and learn about the background of everybody who's been arrested and to suggest a bond that we think is appropriate. For instance, I'm trying not to talk about a lot of these things, but for Mr. Merriweather, in the brawl, we asked for a $500,000 bond and we were given that. However, some people think that I let him out of jail on a $400 bond, but they just don't know the system. So part of what I want to do is communicate a little bit about how the system actually works. But the most important thing for me is that we do everything in my office that we can to prosecute these defendants with integrity so that we know we get the right person to be convicted of the crime, and we don't put innocent people away. And when we make mistakes and put the wrong person in jail, that's when some criminal is free to commit a crime again, and that doesn't make us safe. I want all of us to feel safe. And can I segue into downtown?
Sure.
So my office is downtown. I go out every day to either take a walk or to run to the Kroger's or to go to the courthouse. But in addition, my husband and I come downtown frequently for entertainment. When our friends come into town, we take them downtown because it's beautiful. We go to the riverfront, we go to the banks, we go to the Fountain Square, we go to Findlay Market. Everybody knows the big stops in our beautiful city. And I want everybody to know that I'm willing to do that because I do feel safe. I do feel safe when I'm downtown.
We do have a caller on the line we're going to take real quick. Hi, Erin. Thanks so much for listening. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is simply, sorry, thanks for taking my call. It's what happened downtown was absolutely horrendous. But people are so quick to jump to conclusions, and there's always more to the story. You know, people say, well, they did this unprovoked, they did this unprovoked. A racial slur, any comments, passerbys, I'm going to react as well. It wouldn't have been like that. That was uncalled for, but please, people need to understand that these people just don't go out hunting for people. There is a reason that that happened. And it's a lot like the Montgomery Inn incident. There was so much other to that story. And these politicians need to just stay away. Why are they piping up and taking advantage of a situation that should be handled? Hamilton County, City of Cincinnati, our prosecutors, our judges here. Just keep the politics out and get the whole story out there.
Well, thank you so much. I think based on what our associate producer is telling me, she's talking about national politicians. She's referring there to national and statewide politicians, not the local folks we have on right now. We are going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll talk with the co-founders of the first podcast created in prison. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about violent crime in Cincinnati, what's being done to reduce crime, and whether more could be done. My guests are Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillich, Cincinnati City Councilmember Jeff Kramerding, and Cincinnati Inquirer Opinion and Engagement Editor Kevin Aldridge. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Before we took a break, we had a caller, Erin, and what she told our associate producer was, let Cincinnati take care of Cincinnati. Kevin, what do you think about that? Are there national politicians, other folks who aren't from Cincinnati or familiar with Cincinnati who are jumping onto this situation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you saw this thing from the beginning sort of take that sort of political bent. You know, you asked me earlier about whether I thought, you know, some of the elements of how the fight started and the racial elements played any significant factor in how we look at this. And I think it's clear to anybody who's paying attention that the racialization and politicization of this incident almost off the top from those at in prominent national positions who amplified this, we're clearly trying to play on those issues with very little concern about genuine concern about Cincinnati or our issues here or how to even fix them. And I think, you know, you've seen various people outside of Cincinnati, you know, try to pile on for whatever particular political purposes that they've had. And I even feel like our own Senate representatives, our own senators, Bernie Moreno has not handled the situation. You know, look, he represents Cincinnati and the constituents here. Rather than threatening to pull federal funding from the city, perhaps he should have taken a better approach more along the lines of Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, who offered help and assistance versus trying to politicize and make this a partisan issue where you start to threaten the city. So I sort of feel like anybody who's watching and really paying attention can see the politicization and the racialization of this situation. And there are a lot of people out there who are acting like they care about what's going on here in Cincinnati, but really all they care about is furthering their own agendas.
And I have to agree with Kevin on this. We've seen a lot of rhetoric that's usually wrong, that is getting people all excited and sort of inflames the emotions. If our federal representatives want to help us, they need to listen to us about the things that we need. I did have a chance to meet with Senator Moreno yesterday, and while the meeting did start out a little rough, after a while he did start to understand that he's not an executive officer. He can't really tell us what to do, but he can help direct or request some federal funds our way. I don't know how long that might take, but we could use some things in this area. We could use strong cooperation with the ATF and with the U.S. Attorney's Office and with the DEA, the FBI. We're all in this together, and if we want to keep up with the enormous workload in my office, then we need to work together to make sure that we can get all these cases processed.
We have another caller on the line. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for calling. What's your comment or question?
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what Mr. Aldridge, I believe the gentleman's name was, earlier said about, you know, you're not going to be able to throw more police out there, you know, arrest your way out of an issue like this that what we're seeing right now is a broader social issue, and it just happened to play out in the streets of Cincinnati that day. You know, I've been traveled all over the country and all over the tri-state in particular, and have never had an issue with having my face stomped in by somebody. I think if you walk into somebody's house and you insult them, you can expect to get people angry. And, you know, it sounds like what happened was a shame, and the gentleman did the crime of beating the man up and is going to do the time. But you also can't ignore the fact that, you know, when you insult somebody's face like that, you're going to invite some issues. So it's just a shame that it's happening like this. But until we address the broader issues at play in our country, you know, that's just going to be one of many incidents to come, I'm afraid.
Okay. You know? Thank you, Andrew. We sure appreciate that. And thank you for listening. Councilmember Kramerding, I know Mayor Pureval was involved in that meeting with Senator Moreno yesterday, too. He released a statement saying that he, you know, appreciated his listening and that there's work ahead. Are you concerned, Councilmember Kramerding, about funding and having enough money to do what city officials believe needs to be done?
Well, I'm absolutely concerned about federal funding. There's been a lot of changes in Washington over the 6 months. So we're having funding cut for all sorts of critical programs. So I am certainly concerned about cuts to federal funding, and these are impacting our city residents and will continue to impact our city residents. I mean, just yesterday, Council, we had millions of dollars in Department of Justice grants that were used for hiring police officers, preventing youth violence, preventing domestic violence. All these are under threat and have been for the past 6 months. So I know the meeting with Senator Moreno happened. You know, he made his comments. I hope that those were misguided, and he's stepped back from that. But the threat remains, regardless of what he said. And these changes from Washington are going to affect Cincinnati and its citizens.
We got an email from Anna who writes, the councilman mentioned addressing the root cause of youth violence and other violence. One of the root causes is poverty and housing insecurity. We unfortunately have made minimal progress in improving affordable housing in Cincinnati. How are these root causes being addressed for people that are both victims and involved in violence? Councilmember Kramerding, would you like to address that?
Yes, and the listener's critique, I think, is accurate. This council and this mayor have made housing a priority, but we have not made enough progress. We are not bringing enough units online. We had a report called the Cincinnati Futures Commission that had a number of recommendations. A critical one, from my perspective, the most important one was a 0.1% earnings tax that would go for housing and economic development. That 0.1% earnings tax, relatively small, would bring the city, you know, $26 million a year that could just be used for housing. We're often compared to peer cities like Columbus, which is producing housing at a much greater rate because they've got the resources. When you're developing in a urban environment like the city, no matter what neighborhood you're going to work in, you're going to build in, you're going to need a subsidy. The city does not have that cash to attract that development. So that is a critical failure. We have not pushed forward on the Cincinnati Futures recommendations fast enough. It's still being discussed. I think it will happen, but it has to be more urgent.
We got an email from Stephen Oakley also. I'm not going to read the whole thing because we're running out of time. He says, you know, you can point to more police being needed, the role of the media, the need for more parental involvement, all kinds of things. He says, quote, the problem is the decline of civility in our culture. It didn't happen overnight, nor will it be reversed at speed faster than it has evolved. It begins one step at a time and should have started many yesterdays ago. Kevin, in about 20 seconds, what do you think about that? Is this going to be a defining moment for Cincinnati deciding what we want to be?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. If we take that opportunity, and I agree with Steve, I think civility, respect, listening to one another, and understanding that lots of things can be true at the same time.
Okay.
And being able to acknowledge that and respectfully listen to one another has got to be a part of that. And I think we have an opportunity to.
Thank you so much. Sorry to cut you off there, Kevin. I've been talking with Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillich, Cincinnati City Council Member Jeff Kramerding, and Cincinnati Inquirer Opinion and Engagement Editor Kevin Aldridge. Thank you all for your time today and this important conversation. Stay with us. This is Cincinnati Edition.